Reading from Luke chapter 8, beginning at verse 22. One day Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side of the lake." So they got in a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down the lake so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him." They sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. There Jesus stepped ashore. He was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me." For Jesus had commanded the evil spirit to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied, because many demons had gone into him, and they begged him repeatedly not to order them to go into the abyss. A large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into them, and he gave them permission. When the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. When those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this in the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured. Then all the people of the region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them because they were overcome with fear. So he got into the boat and left. The man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return home and tell how much God has done for you." So the man went away and told all over the town how much Jesus had done for him. This is the word of the Lord.
Let's pray. Father, we pray that by your Spirit you will make this your word alive, living and effective, both in our ears and in our hearts. Amen. Now, what would terrify you most? Being in a small boat shipping water at an alarming rate in the middle of a raging storm? Coming face to face with a raging demon-possessed man? Or meeting the Jesus we read about here? Did you pick up how much fear there is in these two stories? Let's look at the first story. It's at Jesus' suggestion that they take that boat ride across the Lake of Galilee to the other side. Into a boat, some 27 feet long, that's about the length of this platform, and 8 foot wide, get 13 men, and they set out onto a stretch of water that was infamous for the terrible storms that could suddenly spring up without warning and just as quickly calm down. You see, cold air sweeps down from the Mediterranean across the surrounding hills and meets the hot air over the lake, and fierce winds and high waves kick off, and that happens even today. And it looks like this one was one of the worst of those squalls. Did you notice the word Luke used, squall? But before the storm even started, and certainly before it began to swamp the boat, Jesus settled down for a nap. Does it amaze you that he could stay sleeping through what was a truly life-threatening experience? Did you notice it wasn't the storm that woke him? No, he was aroused from sleep by the cries of his closest followers who were fearing for their lives. But once awake, Jesus dealt with the whole situation with a word or two. The wind and the raging waters subsided and the lake became calm. Now, the disciples were obviously terrified by the storm. But when you read those words that Luke gives us, in fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this?" It wasn't the storm that terrified them. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. And I think there are two very good reasons in the text here. The first is the question he asked. Where is your faith? No word of comfort. There. It's all right. Okay. No word of encouragement. It was much closer to a rebuke. Certainly a challenge. Where is your faith? He said to them. Now, he can't mean that they lost their faith completely. Because in the middle of the storm, who did they turn to do something? To Jesus. Well, that means they had some trust or confidence in Jesus, or they wouldn't have gone to him. No, he seems to be expecting them to go through that storm with total confidence in him. After all, he brought them into that situation, didn't he? And he set the course and he set the destination. He was with them. Shouldn't he get them through it? Shouldn't they believe that with Jesus there, they would get to the other side no matter what? They should, shouldn't they? Even with Jesus present, but apparently doing nothing. Okay. Put yourself in that boat. Would you behave like that I've just described? Now let's think what these men already knew about Jesus. He's dealt with evil spirits. He's healed any and every sort of disease and condition. Some of them had actually had the experience, the fishermen among them, of catching a miraculous number of fish when Jesus said, "Do this," and my word, there was the miraculous catch of fish. Leprosy, paralysis. They'd seen him deal with those things simply by a word. They'd witnessed the miracle of a tax collector becoming a follower of Jesus. A centurion's servant was healed by Jesus' word when Jesus was miles away from him. And they'd been there when Jesus raised a poor widow's dead son to life. We've read all this in these studies in Luke so far. So why shouldn't they go on trusting Jesus in the eye of that terrible storm? Doesn't take much to think about, does it? We all know that when situations like that arise, panic easily sets in, doesn't it? I think one of my most terrifying moments was on a French motorway. I have a reputation in my family of always setting out when there are terrible storms. And this was a really bad one. We were going down, and it was day, but I had to have the lights on. It was teeming with rain. As we came over this bridge, I suddenly found the car aquaplaning. I don't know whether you've ever had that experience. But you lose all contact with the ground. Because I panicked, I didn't do anything. If I touched the brakes, I'd have been in real trouble. But at the end of it, everybody else in the car was all right. But I was an absolute jelly. And I couldn't say anything for ages. I couldn't say anything for ages. You know, the last thing we're likely to do in those sort of situations is sing. Do you remember Hilda Schroeder? Hilda's favourite song was, "With Jesus in the boat, we can smile at the storm, smile at the storm, smile at the storm. With Jesus in the boat, we can smile at the storm as we go sailing by." Boom, boom, yeah. How many of you, when you've gone in a really tough, difficult situation, have sung that song to yourself? I bet it's very few of you. I don't even think even Hilda did. But here we are, we're in what we might call a worst case scenario. Now, it's unlikely that any of us will come across the exact crisis, but you know, many of us sitting here are facing serious situations. Some may be sitting there with not much troubling them at the moment. Others may have things that they're about to face. Some may be in dire things that are already there. So what do we make of what Jesus is expecting of his disciples in that storm? Where do we start if we're not there already? Well, we could try getting to know Psalm 139. Those of you who were at the prayer meeting on Friday would know the encouragement that John gave to us, and Judy and John gave to us, to read Psalm 139 and get hold of the presence of God overseeing our whole lives. You could start there, or you can start with those words that you found on the bookmark, because you've all picked the bookmark up, haven't you? You've all read it and you've all thought, what on earth this is all about? Well, just take a look at it now. If you've got one there. There's some spare ones around, I think. No? There's a couple of spare ones over there. See, we've heard these words spoken so often in this church over the years, and we may even be one of those who've said them. Let's read them together. Jesus is in control. He loves me. He is with me. He will never leave me or forsake me. Even when I pass through the valley of the shadow of death, therefore, by the grace of God, I will continue to trust him. That last bit I put on. But you've heard all those other things. You've heard people say them. You heard people give testimony to them in this church. What about you when you put them all together? Let me suggest then that you take that bookmark and you make that one of the things that you start saying to yourself every day. Forewarned is forearmed, they say. Well, get prepared, because you don't know when the next crisis is going to come in your life that might demand you to say to yourself, he's in control. He loves me. He's with me. He'll never leave me or forsake me. I'll go on trusting him. You never know. This is one way of getting it deep into your mind and into your heart, to rehearse those sorts of words regularly. This is what saints of old would call standing on the promises of God. Stand on the promises of God. Start doing it more and more. Remind yourself. Here are some very basic ones, but they, if you've got them there, they are incredibly reassuring. Where is your faith? When the storms come, is it in the God that we've been singing about, for the joys and for the sorrows, for the best and worst of times? Is that where your faith is? But the second reason for their terror was even more challenging, I think. They knew perfectly well who Jesus was, didn't they? Jesus, the carpenter of Nazareth, the teacher, the preacher, the amazing miracle worker, and they had chosen to follow him as their as his disciples. You think what they just witnessed. If there were other people in boats out on that lake at the same time, as Matthew's account seems to say, they would have experienced that storm start and stop, just like all the other storms, and they would simply say, "Oh, thank goodness that's over. We've come through. We're okay." But those disciples knew the storm hadn't just died down as storms normally do. And it wasn't a coincidence that when Jesus spoke those few words that the raging physical forces of wind and water subsided. No, it was not. It was supernatural control. They had witnessed supernatural control over the physical forces of wind and water. Now, Luke doesn't give us Jesus' exact words. He says Jesus rebuked the wind and waves. What a curious word. Why didn't he say he commanded? Stop, quiet, go down. Why didn't he say commanded? Well, listen to these words from Psalm 106, verse 9. Listen carefully. He rebuked the Red Sea and it dried up. He led them through the depths as through a desert. Do you want that again? He rebuked the Red Sea and it dried up. He led them through the depths as through a desert. This is Old Testament. This is the Exodus from Egypt. Ask yourself, who rebuked the Red Sea? God. Why did he do it? To save his people from certain death at the hands of Pharaoh's troops. How did he do it? Rebuked is the word that is used in that psalm. The barrier of the Red Sea would have brought about the destruction of God's people, but under its creator, it saved them and destroyed their enemies. And if you go into Exodus 13, 41, this is what you'll read. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. Can you see those words, fear and trust? Don't they fit in with what we're talking about this morning? Jesus rebuked the wind and raging waters. You can't miss this, can you? God rebuked. Jesus rebuked. The people feared and trusted. To the disciples, where is your faith? Where is your faith? God rebuked, Jesus rebuked. But you see, those disciples were still shaking, much like me on that French motorway. And they're trying to get their heads round what they had seen. The power of God the Creator exercised by a man they knew to be just as human as they were. Were they sort of reaching towards the thought that perhaps they had been looking at the Creator of the universe in that boat with them? That's a terrifying and amazing thought, isn't it? For us, it's commonplace. It's easy for us to be saying that sort of thing. But think of them in that storm. And Jesus says, where's your faith and what they've just seen? You can have some sympathy with them. The question then, who is this, is much bigger than Jesus of Nazareth, the prophet, and all the rest of it. Who is this? It's already been asked twice in Luke, in those two amazing moments when Jesus forgave sin as God forgives sin. In the next chapter, we'll find Herod. King Herod is saying about Jesus, well, who is this? And in the chapter after that, it'll be Jesus who'll be saying, who do people say that I am? And then he says to them, who do you say that I am? And you remember Peter's answer? The Christ of God. Here they were, you see, living with this man, a man like them, but they're discovering that he was capable of more and more amazing things. And this stretches their minds incredibly. But eventually, one of them, do you remember Thomas? When he saw the risen Jesus, do you remember what he exclaimed? Say it with me. My Lord and my God. This Jesus who stilled the storm is God come among us in human form. The disciples reacted in terror in the situation, but later came to worship him. And when you stop and think about this, that's our proper response too, is to worship the Jesus who was in that boat. More than that, of course, the Jesus who, as we've sung in one of our songs already, was on the cross, and the Jesus who rose from the tomb. Now to story two. From one storm to another, and this time into the storm raging inside that miserable specimen of humanity, a man so degraded and humiliated, taken over so totally and violently by evil spirits that he'd lost all individuality, all personality, all self-respect, all standing in his community. What a wreck of a man. Now, no one's exactly sure where this took place. The best guess is near one of two towns. It was either Gadara or Gerasa. But what is for sure is that other side of the lake was predominantly Gentile. Most people living there were not Jews. Jews, if there were there, were in a minority. Pigs is the biggest clue to that. Now, I hazard a guess that the disciples were shaken in their sandals again when that man raced out of the tombs and threw himself at the feet of Jesus. But it is the spirit within the man which is in real terror simply at the sight of Jesus and the thought of what Jesus was capable of doing to it. You see, the moment he saw the man, Jesus had already taken control and with irresistible power commanded the spirit to come out. Now see the terror. Remember how Colin read it to us. See how the spirit knows who Jesus is and how he acknowledges Jesus' authority. What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me. Terror. Absolute terror. Now, these disciples had seen Jesus cast out demons before, but this turns out to be another worst-case scenario, doesn't it? And Jesus says, what is your name? Legion. Now, a Roman legion is an army battle group of a minimum 600 soldiers. And a legion, well, this is just a way of saying there were an awful lot of them. An awful lot of spirits had been tormenting this man, isolating him from himself, his family and community. Now, Jesus has not been presented with anything like this before. But you notice it doesn't faze him, it doesn't faze him at all. Now, there's so many strange things about what happens next. and you get no answers from the text. I mean, why does Jesus allow the Spirit to negotiate? Never happened any other time. Why do the spirits choose pigs to inhabit? But what we learn from the fate of the pigs is first that there really were spirits inside that man, and a lot of them, and that they really did leave when Jesus said go. And second, that what those spirits did to the pigs, they would in the end have done to the man. Destroyed him. Total destruction. But he is delivered, clothed, and in his right mind, sitting as a disciple would at the feet of Jesus. Who could transform a being like that in such a simple moment? Who? Of course, if you're a swineherd and you see your whole herd go manic and plunge to their death like lemmings, you're not going to be too pleased, are you? Those swineherds who witnessed all this ran off and told everybody they could find, and a huge crowd gathered around Jesus and his disciples from all over the place. Luke tells us that it was the sight of the man, now normal, in his right mind, clothed, sitting at Jesus' feet, that frightened them. They were frightened of a normalized human being. Does that puzzle you? They were frightened. Well, let's think. They lived with this man for some time, obviously. Any number of times they had controlled him when he went on one of his rampages. Or they overpowered him somehow. They chained him. But what happened next? He just broke the chains and the spirits drove him off into desolate places. You see, however many men it took to shackle him, in the end their best efforts were useless. Seeing him there, they realized there was a power far, far greater than they could imagine, that had been exercised to transform that man that they knew so well into this man that they could see now. There was someone there with that man who had the power over evil forces that they had never, ever come to understand ever before. And they asked Jesus to go away. They'd seen a miracle every bit as impressive as the disciples had seen on the lake. And they wanted nothing to do with the man who'd brought it about. A man has been delivered and a herd of pigs destroyed. Go away, Jesus, leave us alone. Far from believing and seeing Jesus as someone to trust, they were filled with fear. What about us? When we start thinking about the evil that's both in the world and the evil that comes from within us and the evil that can afflict us, what do we do? Do you remember how often you pray the Lord's Prayer? What's the most significant bit you would have to remember from the Lord's Prayer now? Can you say it? Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. How many of you have been listening to the urging, even this morning, to put on the armor of God? Which bit of the armor is particularly important with relation to what we're thinking about this morning? Is it a shield of faith with which you can quench all the fiery darts of the evil one. Do you put on your armor every day? Do you take this issue seriously? That you are in a spiritual battle? That your eternal soul is at risk? That God has provided through the gospel, through Jesus Christ, he's provided everything you need to feel secure in the face of this battle and to be able to stand till you do it. Being reminded that's something that Tom, because he taught me, Tom does every day. The awful truth we see here is that if you tell Jesus to go away, he will. Does that frighten you? No argument, no persuasion. He got into the boat and he left them as he will today if we reject him. Now that, I suggest, is terrifying. Question. Did he leave them? The man who'd been restored to his right mind asked to go with Jesus and become a follower like the disciples. But almost dismissively, Jesus sent him away saying, "Return home and tell how much God has done for you." Jesus sent him on a one-man mission back home to tell his story, to be a witness among people who might still be afraid of him, might still exclude him, might still cause problems and reject him. Now, I know that in the Great Commission, Jesus says, "Go and make disciples of all nations." But it seems to me that most followers are given the same mission as that man. And that is to share the good news where they live. The man was obedient. He went away, told all over the town how much Jesus had done for him. So, in that man, was Jesus present among the people who said, "Go away and leave us"? Thought, isn't it? What I want you to do is to compare the words of Jesus to the man and Luke's closing words. I want you to listen carefully again. This is what Jesus said. "Return home and tell how much God has done for you." This is how Luke finishes. "So the man went away and told all over the town how much Jesus had done for him." What do you notice? What did Jesus tell the man to do? Tell what God had done. What does Luke say he did? He told what Jesus. Who is this? Is Luke giving you the answer to the disciples' question? Who is this? Go and tell what God has done. He went and told what Jesus had done. You can't miss it, can you? Oh, this Jesus, this stiller of storms, the storms of nature and the storms of evil. Only God could do this. And the disciples and the people of Gerasa had seen it. One group, recognizing in the end how vitally important all this was, went on to worship Jesus. The other went away in fear to their own darkness. Unless, of course, they listened to that man. And each and every one of us, there's only two choices. Each and every one of us has to make up our mind after what we've been looking at today and everything else we looked at in Luke and everything we've celebrated here today with the communion. Everyone has to make up their mind. They have to make up their mind what their answer to that question is. Who is this? if you are convinced that this is God come among us, there is only one response you can make, and that is to bow down in worship and gratitude and yield yourself to him, to be used by him howsoever he chooses in his service. Now, if that's you, take seriously the challenge of the question, where is your faith? Because that's what's going to be showing when things hit. Take that seriously. But take it seriously too, to honour this one in the way that you live. Let it not just be words. Let it be in the way that you live. And if you're sitting there and you're hesitating still, can I encourage you to give some serious thought about taking some action and putting your trust in this one? This one who could sleep in a boat that's about to sink and rescue everybody in it with barely two words. Who could transform one of the worst cases of human destruction in moments into a wonderful, normal human being. Oh, what a man. What a man. A man? Only a man? What's your answer? Who is this?